You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you back here up north on this Wednesday morning, September 3rd. Parker Olson producing this shindig down in Madison Studio A2. And coming up a little later this hour, we'll talk to Peggy Wirtz Olson from WEAC. It's back to school time. And along with tracking, you know, new lessons and homework assignments comes tracking legislation out of Madison and Washington, D.C. And we'll find out from the Educators Association what it is that they're following. Some things that are very big picture bills and some that are rather ticky tack, you know, micromanaging what teachers do for a living. So we'll get into that a little bit later on this hour, again, on this Wednesday morning. It's the 3rd of September, and I wanted to point out a couple of comments that were in the mailbag here as we get set to bring Brittany on board here. Let's see, Alicia notes on YouTube, oh boy, it just started raining kind of hard here in Green Bay. I'm looking at the radar right now, and I'm seeing exactly what you mean here. And let's see, there was also one about the weather here. It was from Roger on Facebook, who says, good morning. My Facebook memories show that 2 years ago today, the high in Stevens Point was 101 and that it got to 100 in Waupaca and Wisconsin Rapids. Brittany Merlot is here to tell us that ain't happening today.
No way. I don't know. Now I'm like, would you rather have 100 degrees or 50 degrees?
Oh, we're doing would you rather on 50 or on 50 or 100?
50.
Parker, if it's on Parker? 50 or 100... Well, again, it depends on the calendar. If it's August,
yes,
I'm going to insist right on 100. It's September. I could accept the 50.
Ooh, I like it, Pat. I know.
See, I'm not that much of a summer devotee. I just don't want it to be 50 in August. 50 in September is what we're going to get, though. That's just what's out there, because I mean, that is a well-defined front that is moving through Green Bay and getting close to the Madison area and down to Prairie du Chien. And there's some noticeable changes behind it, aren't there?
Oh, yes. Those winds are whipping out of the northwest across Lake Superior right now. It's picking up into the north. You can definitely feel the difference. In fact, northeast Wisconsin today, your high temperatures, you're only going to make it to the mid-40s. You're actually going to be dropping a lot of the northern part of the state throughout the afternoon. Highs will be hit early this morning, 50s to 60s for most of the state today. Maybe we'll squeak out a 70 degree by Milwaukee. I highly doubt it, but it is possible. That front is, of course, moving its way towards Madison right now into the Fox Valley and headed towards Milwaukee afterwards. A lot of the northwest part of the state staying dry this morning, but a few wraparound spotty showers and storms do still look like they head towards us again this afternoon. So chances for rain still continuing. It's going to be a dark and damp day today, mostly cloudy. Winds starting to whip, like I said, much, much cooler than where we should be. And then the clouds start to clear late tonight. This is not a good thing because this is going to allow the temperatures to crash pretty chilly. I'm talking mid-30s throughout north central parts of the state. We could see a frost advisory going out, maybe dropping to 32 degrees in some places like Hayward or maybe up towards Vilas County. Those areas tonight, if you have sensitive plants outside or gardens still going, take care of that before it gets too cold by the morning. Tomorrow, we're not looking at much warmth either. Low 50s to low 60s across the state. We'll start off with some sunshine, but then we've got more rain rolling through tomorrow afternoon and into the evening, winding down by Friday. And we actually have a dry weekend ahead, and it slowly starts to warm up, but we stay breezy through at least Friday and well below average.
Let's see. We've got from Robin Tigerton. Good morning. It's cloudy, 60 degrees. Tigerton picked up 0.3 of an inch of rain from a thunderstorm that went through around 5 a.m. yesterday. I mowed 6 yards in Tigerton. The fall grass is coming through. There's a little brownish top to the grass now. Mm-hmm. Not here yet, but I've been watching for it. Yep. Today I have a doctor's appointment in Shawano. I have to find an alternate route to ThetaCare because the Highway 2922 interchange is closed. That's the main route from 29 to downtown Shawano. So Labor Day may be past, but construction season, it's not over yet. And Rob also handy on the weather almanac. He says that 2 years ago on this date, it was 101 degrees in Tigerton. But to get
I'll
to Brittany's, yeah,
I
well,
like
and that's where Tony wraps it up by saying 50 all day, every day.
Yes, yeah, same here. That's comfortable, right? You can put on more clothes. 100 and, oh, no.
And you get used to 50, too. You don't get used to 100.
That's true. Good point, Parker.
Rob says, just think if we had this pattern in January, temperatures would not get above zero. And that's where I draw the line. You can talk about 50 and you can talk about 100, but zero is like, no, I never accept that. Can you just very briefly talk about the concept of wraparound showers? Because it's got to be tricky, because it's one thing to see a system coming in and the system is swirling counterclockwise as they do. Yep. And so you see the front end and then that wrapping around it counterclockwise. Sometimes you get showers on the backside as it comes through, and sometimes you don't. And am I right? Is that a much trickier thing to predict?
It really is, because you're getting this cold, dry air that's moving in behind it. Well, that kind of kills showers and storms. So when you also get the cold, dry air over the lake, that creates them. So it's hard to determine just the right standards. Will it actually happen? Will it fall? Will it be a light rain or will it be a heavy rain too? So there's a lot of things with those wraparound showers, but with the strong winds and a big system disturbing it, more than likely we go with it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking, you know, the system is such that, you know, I'm guessing the center is right there on the border between Michigan and the UP, because there's a mess of showers, you know, that wrap around up into Lake Superior. Yeah. But then you're kind of looking going, well, does it wrap around the backside and spank you again? It's like, well, we don't know. You never know what these systems are going to do.
Maybe this afternoon. We'll
keep an eye out for it. All right, Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Reminder, you can sign up for the Up North News daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and get signed up there. We have a question of the week as well. And our question this week is about dreamers. Those would be the children of undocumented immigrants, and the United States is the only country they've ever known. Their parents have been here working hard, paying taxes into the system, even though they're never going to get the benefits from it, despite what some politicians want to tell you. These kids have been going to school, they've been graduating, they've been moving on, they've become adults. Are they now fair game for you to just pluck off the streets and deport to a country they've ever never known? Or would the better way to go be providing a path toward citizenship? I mean, the answer seems to be self-evident, but I definitely want to hear from people who are so, quote-unquote, law and order, that they believe that people like this are, you know, deserve to be stateless, that if Donald Trump wants to round them up, yeah, he can round them up because their parents came here and did not go through a system that has not been reformed, that is so ridiculously convoluted. But we'd love to have your thoughts, and you get our Sunday morning question of the week first if you sign up for our Sunday morning newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. A little later, I'm going to get into three different topics where we can make the point that not every issue is decided on a partisan or even an ideological basis right away on a knee-jerk reaction. There's not one, not two, but three different stories where I can honestly look at them and go, I'm not sure how I feel about this. I need to learn more. It's the kind of thing I wish more people would say, is just to say, you know, I don't know. Let me look into it and I'll give you my thoughts later. And don't just shoot from the lip. You know, the way Donald Trump did about, he was asked about an object being thrown from the White House window over the weekend. And he was like, oh, that's AI. And oh, maybe it was AI. Maybe I should just blame everything on AI. Well, we learned later that some maintenance work was being done and some items were being, you know, thrown through the window down to a dumpster or whatever. So it was real. Why wouldn't the president just say, I don't know, this is the first I've heard of it, let me get back to you, instead of just making up stuff? So we'll get into some of these issues a little bit later on. But first, with Parker Olson here, I want to explore a topic you might have heard from Mike Clemens doing sports at the top here. And he's got sound from Brewers manager Pat Murphy saying, well, we haven't had that talk yet. Well, actually, we have. We're starting this talk right now. The talk being Jacob Mizorowski. Great electric start in the beginning, first game or two. And then what we're seeing from him is saying to me and a whole lot of other people, this guy's not a starter. This guy belongs in the bullpen. He's throwing 102 miles an hour consistently. How is this guy not your closer, or at least your guy in the seventh and eighth innings to shut things down? I mean, Pat Murphy's saying, well, we don't really need that right now. I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, I get it. You need starting pitching. You need good starting pitching. But is Jacob Mizorowski the best starting pitcher if you're only going to get 3+ innings?
No, he's not. I think that you're at a point with Mizorowski that you definitely would be better off in, like, I think a long relief. I don't think he might be best with an opener. If you have an opener for 1-2, if Aaron Ashby opens for like 2 innings and Mizorowski comes in, he gives you another 3, maybe 4, that could put you in a really good spot. I don't know necessarily that the Brewers need any more setup man or closer type things, but maybe with Trevor McGill suffering that sprain, I can't remember what it is, something on his elbow.
Trevor McGill too? Or was it just Shelby Miller?
Oh,
from other day.
I'm gonna fact check myself. I thought that we had somebody that was messed up here.
Yeah, no, Shelby Miller felt something in his elbow pop when he was pitching the other day. So, and again, much like the three items I'm talking about in the news, this item too, it's like there is no instant answer. I actually, you know, you can hear it in our voices. We actually want to know a little bit more. We want to talk this out a bit, that because Mizorowski had like a perfect 6 innings in his debut, you know, and then he was a no hitter for like, what, four or five innings in his second game.
Yeah.
We're thinking, oh, this is the starter of the future. We're going to get no hitters out of this guy. We're going to get perfect games out of this guy. And it turns out, no, we're not. You're going to get a couple of really good innings. So where do you use them best? Yeah. And because we're not a sports talk station, we're just going to leave it at that. We just set the table. We just set the table, and then you all discuss later on.
I did fact check myself, though. I am correct.
Trevor McGill has a thing, too.
Trevor McGill has a right flexor strain. He's on the 15-day IL right now.
Gotcha.
So all right. Maybe you put McGill back there. Or
Mizorowski. So maybe we just stop trying to second guess Pat Murphy. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Leave him and his pocket pancakes alone. He's doing fine.
Yes. Brewers were off yesterday, finally, and now they get back in action this evening against the Phillies. Coverage begins at 6:05 on stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Hayward. And while we're talking sports, of course, there's high school football all over the place across the Civic Media Radio Network. Head over to the website, civicmedia.us, to learn more. And, of course, on Saturday, you've got Badger football. The Badgers taking on Middle Tennessee. Coverage begins at 1 o'clock on Saturday on stations in Richland Center, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, and Ripon. And there's more. The Packers are playing on some Civic Media stations as well, playing the Detroit Lions in the season opener this Sunday. Kickoff is at 3:25. But you can catch the pregame for the Packers starting Sunday at 1 p.m. on WRCO in Richland Center, WCQM in Park Falls, WRJN in Racine, and then Civic Media's newest Green Bay Packers affiliate, WAUH in Wautoma. All of those places where you can catch the Packers. We'll be talking to Peggy Wirtz-Olson from WEAC coming up in about 15 minutes. But first, from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wasota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. It's just about 7:23 on this Wednesday morning. It's 57 degrees in the Chippewa Valley, 64 in La Crosse right now. Amory, you're at 54, Oshkosh 63 degrees. And in Wautoma at Cristiano's Coffee Bar, it is 62 degrees right now. We occasionally get people who ask us about the way the morning show is structured, because throughout the course of the morning, there are folks at some of our local affiliates who get local news updates a couple of times an hour. And they ask, well, what if, you know, you're continuing to ramble on, right? I'm like, yeah, that's what we do. We just kind of keep yapping here. And like, well, what if we wanted to listen to what you're doing? Well, Facebook and YouTube, or you could subscribe to us as a podcast. Now, if by chance, let's go the other way. Let's say you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, or you're catching us by podcast, but you actually want to know what your local civic media station is covering. Well, our friends at Civic Media have local news updates that you can get on their individual websites. So you start by going to civicmedia.us and then go to your local Civic Media station. And up near the top of each station's homepage, you'll find a daily news roundup that you can listen to right there. You can sign up for email versions of their daily updates as well, all right there. And so there's many ways to listen to us and listen to all that we do, whether it's over social media, over terrestrial radio, by podcast, or by listening at the website or getting the newsletter, all of these different ways to follow what we're doing at Up North News and across the Civic Media radio network. All right, I promised you I'd mention a few things where it's not really easy to say from the top, I like this idea, I don't like this idea. One of them deals with Epic, the big medical records company based out of Madison. The headline in the Cap Times is Epic partners with the Trump administration on a new health tech initiative. Okay. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says the goal is building, quote, smarter, more secure, and more personalized healthcare experiences. The project is focusing on two areas, according to the Cap Times: more access to personalized tools for patients to better understand their medical information, and promotion of a federal network that would allow health systems to exchange and use information in a coordinated and secure way. Okay, now, if Donald Trump weren't president, and I told you all of those things, you might be inclined to say, yeah, that makes sense. Well, one problem we have in this country is that health systems, databases, and records can't talk to each other. And I know from having a wife who's a physician, the frustration of a new patient coming to you, but they don't have all the stuff in their medical history, and it's not easy to access it from someplace else. So on the surface, there's definitely something positive about this. But now you add what Elon Musk and Doge did with sensitive personal information across all government databases, and now you're wondering, well, what are they going to do when they can have access to our medical records and medical history? So I'm not ready to say that what Epic is doing shouldn't be done in partnership with the Trump administration, but I am saying that there's reason to want to know more and to know more about the safeguards that would be in place to protect our privacy. Here's the next issue. It deals with President Trump meeting with the president of South Korea last week and an announcement being made that South Korea is going to help rebuild the U.S. shipbuilding industry. Now, recall we had Tom Nelson on a couple of weeks back about his book about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald and how the Edmund Fitzgerald was actually in really poor shape, very poor maintenance. A lot of shortcuts had been taken, in part because America had taken its shipbuilding industry for granted and then let it wither and practically die. I think we build something like 1% of the world's ships right now. It used to be a much, much bigger number. South Korea is one of those big players. And so Trump and South Korea announcing a partnership that South Korea would help the U.S. build up its shipbuilding, again, on its surface, sounds like it has potential. But again, what are the safeguards that protect American jobs? Senator Tammy Baldwin put out a statement about this the other day saying, okay, let's make sure that this is actually good for American workers, that this isn't, say, another Foxconn where an overseas company comes in, makes all these big promises, and then doesn't fulfill them. Or is this just all on the surface and it's actually South Korea that's going to be building more of our ships? Are we just outsourcing more of our shipbuilding? So again, in this story, a couple of different ways to look at it. We got to learn more before we pass judgment, and we've got to look for the safeguards. And then finally, I noticed at what was at first a rather interesting but somewhat generic announcement about a new advocacy organization called the Northwoods Policy Network. And full of, you know, the kind of language you'd want to hear, the organization aims to be the Northwoods voice across the state, advocating for greater policy considerations and economic opportunity. The group will educate others on the unique challenges our communities have faced in recent decades, as well as offering research and solutions that make our region not just a destination, but a home. Okay, that's all fine. But then when you look at, say, some of the tweets that they put out, it's pretty clear that they talk about, for example, one of the co-founders is a big supporter of, you know, small modular nuclear reactors, is opposed to solar energy, wants to talk about growing the lumber industry, and also talks about other energy investments. And I don't mean new energy or green energy. I'm talking about, again, going with things that are not necessarily in line with what you might find in the Inflation Reduction Act. In other words, what I'm saying is, for all the cliches about representing the Northwoods, it better not be just another, as if Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce had a branch office up north, and the answer is to just clear-cut forests and to build more strip mines. If that's what the Northwoods Policy Network is about, we want no part of it. But again, we don't know that. There's definitely room to learn more. And so we're going to keep an open mind, but I wanted to tell you about it to make sure that you follow it. More after this. You're up north. Hey, Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network, and you can head over to couriernewsroom.com to read more newsletters, all of the state-based news coverage from around the country. Of course, Cam Stevenson has his new Below the Beltway newsletter out of the nation's capital. There's podcasts, there's merchandise, and more. Again, head to couriernewsroom.com to learn more. Welcome to our homeroom segment, where we speak every week at this time about public education in Wisconsin, opportunities, threats, and so forth. And it's the start of a new school year. It's not just the kids that are back in class. It's not just the teachers that are getting back to work, but things are getting back into gear in Madison and in Washington, D.C. A lot is happening there for our educators to keep an eye on. And so to help the educators keep an eye on things is the Wisconsin Education Association Council. And Peggy Wirtz-Olson joins us from there now. Peggy, good morning. And I can't help but notice, let's see, you spell your name O-L-S-E-N as well. Same as that Parker Olson guy. Parker, is there a connection here we need to know?
There's a slight connection. This is my Aunt Peg.
Welcome to the show. Peggy Wirtz-Olson is your Aunt Peg.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. I love the small world thing. This makes me happy. Peggy, let's forget the school stuff. Let's get into Parker here for a second.
No.
Are you proud of this young man that he has not taken very good choices in life, and he's ended up on a ridiculous morning radio show? Do you want to give him any career advice right now at this point?
Well, it's fantastic to get to see him so early in the morning. And when he said he had taken a job with you all, you know, like finished college, starting with you almost the next day, Perfect career choices, Parker Olson. Well done.
Thanks.
I'm getting, it's like every day, and I don't get outside very much, but I'm getting compliments all the time. Like, hey, that Parker, he's really a nice addition and all
no,
that.
You're not.
So yes, I am. And so I clearly have Peggy to thank for this. I now know where the good family influence came from. So, thank you, Aunt Peg, for doing that. Let's get into some of the WEAC matters that you're working on for the start of the new school year. I was looking at the WEAC website about the various bills that you have to follow, and you can do that at WEAC.org. And I mean, they range all over the place. There was news coverage recently about a back to school sales tax holiday. Then there's big picture things like, you know, the state budget and revenue and referendums. And there are these things that are rinky dink to the point of ridiculousness about just basically wanting to micromanage teachers. It is a small miracle, Peggy, that you guys can follow everything that might affect your members in one, in some way, shape, or form.
Well, you know, as our members, right, educators like me start this school year, I know that top of mind is certainly their excitement about jumping back into the classroom. But they often tell me, I want to focus on the work I do every day in my school with my students. And I don't have all the time to be tracking the, as you've referred to it, some of the micromanaging or some of the nonsense that comes out of sometimes Washington, especially now, and certainly Madison.
No, and that's where a lot of people are. They just want to do their job, but they also want to be informed, you know, without having to go through all the bills themselves and everything else. So over the summer, when your members would say, look, I was really busy, what is this deal with the state budget? Did it help or hurt or what? What are the kinds of things that you told your members in the wake of the state budget as far as what it did and what it didn't do going forward?
Yeah, our members were disappointed with what they saw out of Madison with this state budget. You know, zero new aid for K-12 public schools. So basically we have a budget that's not going to keep up with inflation. And 66% of our school districts are set to lose state aid. Now, we can unpack more of the struggles with that budget, you know, special ed reimbursement that falls short of what we need, asking for 90%, the same as our vouchers get. And, you know, we landed on 42% and 45% in the second year. So unpacking all of that, but it doesn't take an expert in any field to recognize that public schools are underfunded and this budget didn't get it done to help that.
No, and I would call folks' attention to our friends at Motherhood for Good, and Kate Duffy did another one of her excellent videos that explains this whole situation, explains revenue limits and the per pupil adjustments, what that means versus the general state aid. And yeah, you can put a little more money in the special education pot, but you can't say that that makes up for a 0% increase in general education aid. I mean, that's just not how the numbers work when it comes to inflation and things like that. And so we are almost certainly going to see another wave of school referendums, which again puts educators and school board members in a position of having to quote unquote justify asking the property taxpayers for more money. I sense, Peggy, that this is much, it's becoming less of a defensive answer and more of a go on offense answer in terms of, you know, really pointing out who is it that's holding back and underfunding our public schools.
Absolutely. So, you know, decisions in Madison impact districts, every district across Wisconsin. The bottom line really comes down to the haves and the have-nots when you're asking primarily most school districts in Wisconsin to ask their own taxpayers to raise their taxes to fund their public schools. And we're talking about keeping the doors open and the lights on. We're not talking about high level needs, right? We're talking about basic necessities. So the haves and the have-nots, communities that can pass a referendum and get their tax base behind it, can organize, right, and make sure that their message is clear, then they win a referendum. And those that can, that are unable to do that, lose. But it's really, it's not about winners and losers. When we're talking about our public schools and our students, we all want students to win.
We're talking to Peggy Wirtz-Olson, WEAC president and educator, here on our homeroom segment on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News across the Civic Media Radio Network. And again, of all the many bills that are in the hopper in Madison, There is, like I said earlier, some attention on a back-to-school sales tax holiday. And this is, we talked in the last segment about ideas that come up, and it's really, you really shouldn't have a knee-jerk reaction one way or the other until you learn more. And in the case of a back-to-school sales tax holiday, I think that there's a lot to be said for people that say, well, that's just a gimmick, this little window where you don't have a sales tax on school supplies. And then others say, well, So what? Why wouldn't you have a holiday on the sales tax for back to school supplies? Different states handle this in different ways. Is it something where WEAC and educators have a position, or are you simply monitoring what the legislature is going to do with this idea?
Yeah, so we're closely monitoring where this one is headed. I know that, you know, when we consider the real inflationary pressures that every single family like mine and yours are facing today, you know, that ideas get batted about. And I also know, you know, as we monitor this one, I know the on the ground conversations I'm having in schools with our educators who spend hundreds of dollars of their own money in making sure that their classrooms are equipped with what they need.
And now into some of the other bills that are interesting. There's one about a proposal to limit flags that can be flown at the state capitol, resulting in certain flags like the pride flag, you know, from being raised. That has some ramifications for flags that can be displayed in classrooms and at schools. There's access to public high schools for military recruiters and whether they should have more or less access than people like private sector employers. There are bills there about youth membership groups and how they operate. Again, with all these things that are there, we've talked about the big picture thing about, you know, funding our schools properly. As you look at these and all the other bills that are out there, are there any that strike you as being especially noteworthy that they might either be especially helpful or especially, what's the word I'm looking for? Not helpful when it comes to teachers trying to do their jobs?
Well, I think that a lot of times what we see out of Madison are these little niche issues, like you just referenced, that become the focus, right? When we're really trying to figure out big picture needs. We've talked a little bit today about the state budget, and I know our priorities with the budget were around real mental health needs for our students in our classrooms. How do we make sure that there are enough mental health professionals to help every single student who is in need? And universal school meals for kids was another piece of what we were really striving for. I know that my students can't focus in the classroom when they come to school hungry. So what we're advocating for, the educators across the state, is real funding needs that are going to impact our students in positive ways, not debating flags and recruiters.
Cursive writing is another one of them that's come up. 24 states currently incorporate cursive writing. Again, there's a debate to be had about its usefulness in, you know, an internet age or not. There's also, you know, public inspection of school materials. There's sports team participation by gender. All of these things, again, pale in comparison to the big picture of families who are struggling. They want their kids to get an education, but either the school's falling apart or they're not getting enough to eat or anything. And it really has to start with that overarching support or lack of support for public education, which is what you're looking to see, not just in the state budget, but with bills like all of these across the fall session, right?
Absolutely. You know, the kind of advocacy we're doing, as we talk about, is centered on our students in our public schools, how we're going to properly make sure that every student in every public school in Wisconsin has what they need to not just survive, but to thrive.
Mm-hmm. As we continue looking at some of these bills that are coming up, there's also this one. Again, when we talk about kids getting enough to eat, the Healthy School Meals for All bill, which has been brought up year after year after year. And I will say again, and I will continue to sound like a broken record, how is this still a thing? How is it that we are still charging for school meals and allowing some kids to go hungry? Is there any hope that this is the session that Healthy School Meals for All finally crosses the finish line?
Well, I'm an optimist. And so I like to believe that the Healthy School Meals for All, it, you know, is a bipartisan support. When we're talking about feeding kids in our schools to make sure that they can learn, right, and they have what they need. No, our research shows that for some kids, the only nutritious meal they get throughout the day will be at school, whether that's breakfast or lunch. It feels like a bipartisan effort, and let's make this a session where we get it done.
And then finally, one more of these bills deals with a cell phone ban in school. And I really showed my age the other day, saying that I had assumed, as a guy in his 60s, that cell phones had already been banned in classrooms. They've not. It's like district by district. There's this talk about a state policy. Is this a very noteworthy topic among educators, either the usefulness of cell phones in the classroom or the way that they need to be banned because they get in the way of good instruction?
It's a conversation I have with educators a lot. And I know that there are other states that have certainly enacted legislation around this. So as a classroom educator, you know, we want to minimize distractions that are impacting students in our schools and in our classrooms. Yeah. So this will be definitely one to pay attention to.
Yeah. Again, it's kind of educational for me, learning about whether they're a distraction or can be useful in some ways. Peggy Wertz-Olson, WEAC president, so great to connect with you again. Happy start of the school year. Take good care. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I guess you could call it our question of the day. What would you do if you won tonight's Powerball jackpot, $1.3 billion? $1.3 billion. You could do a few things with that. What would you do? You can either put something in the comment sections, Facebook or YouTube, or better yet, use that Civic Media app, use the text feature, and text us what you would do with $1 billion, or use the voice note feature on the Civic Media app as well. Showers and thunderstorms continue working their way to the southeastern corner of Wisconsin. At this point, they've worked their way to, they're around Green Bay and Manitowoc right now, through Fond du Lac, West Bend, Madison, and then down to Dubuque. Dubuque is familiar to Jimmy Cuska, who joins us now, Civic Media News Director, because, well, you weren't in Dubuque proper. You were in East Dubuque last night for a little JV football, right?
A little bit of JV football. By the way, Powerball jackpot, I've got that taken care of. So y'all don't need to think about it. That's all going to me.
It's all going to you. And
it's all going to me.
I'm hoping it includes a high-speed rail link between Boscobel and East Dubuque, where you
Yikes. High school sports, when you're in a border county or a border area, frequently take you across state lines. And this is something we see popular, like in sports like basketball, like where you have more games, where you frequently have events like the Border Battle, which is put on by Mark Miller, who writes the Wisconsin Basketball Yearbook. When it comes to football, it's a little more rare. But if you, like in northern Wisconsin, a lot of teams cross the border and play in the UP. In fact, Hurley was part of a conference that was mostly just UP schools for a long time up there in the northern part of the state. Western Wisconsin, you're in Minnesota. Southern Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa. These are things that happen when you're bordering. And it's kind of neat to be able to play at a different state. Sometimes there's even different rules. You know, in basketball, Wisconsin goes by halves, but if you go to Illinois, you're playing in quarters, and now you'll have shot clock. So there's some really cool things that happen when you get to play across the border.
Wait a minute. There still places that don't have a shot clock?
Yeah, one of those places is Wisconsin. So Wisconsin didn't even get it out to the Board of Control this year. It failed in committee, where in years past, they've actually gotten it all the way to saying, we're going to have a shot clock, and then they immediately pulled it back in Wisconsin because so many people complained about the kind of the immediacy of it, the lack of run-up to it, and the fact that shot clocks would cost schools money. But now a lot of schools shot clocks as they've built new gyms. Sort of waiting for this to happen since all of our border states now have shot clocks in basketball.
Well, yeah. I mean, my goodness, this is like me with the cell phones all over again. Me going, how is this a thing? How are there no shot clocks? I mean, obviously, if it was a bigger problem, we'd be hearing about it. But I'm not familiar with anybody just holding the ball for like 2 minutes at a stretch. And we're not talking like a 24-second shot clock here. What kind of times are we talking about it in other states at the high school level?
Yeah, 35 is kind of the standard. So that's where it is. It's a little bit longer than the college shot clock, which is 30. So 35 in high school. And that's, you know, like I said, it's happening in states neighboring to us where it's either on the way to full go or it's already in. But Wisconsin, we're still a couple years away. The thing that'll make it happen, though, is that it's now part of the NFHS handbook, as the way sports are, because most states do have it. So Wisconsin will get it, whether or not they have to be dragged along to it like they have in a lot of other rule changes in the NFHS. Wisconsin tends up being usually one of the last states to adopt new things, whether it was NIL being one of the last 9 states to get that. For this, they might be one of the last 8 or 9 to do it too. There's already over 30 states with a shot clock. So,
well, I mean, you don't want to rush into anything.
No, absolutely not.
Heaven forbid. We're talking to you, Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director here. We, of course, have not just high school football and more of it this weekend on many Civic Media stations, but of course, we've got your college ranks, the Badgers taking on Middle Tennessee this Saturday. Coverage begins at 1 o'clock. On stations in Richland Center, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Ripon. They opened the season last week. What's the word on Badger football this year?
Well, hey, I mean, getting a shutout in your first game is always pleasant. And then this week, in these bye games, what you're looking for is to just kind of develop your team. And the Badgers certainly need it after last year's season, which was very disappointing, I think, for many. So they get to play Middle Tennessee State, a team that lost last week to an FCS opponent. Badgers are, depending on what you look, 4 touchdown favorites in this game. So this is a good spot for the Badgers to develop, especially with a backup quarterback going. The Badgers are going this week, as are the Packers. So this is kind of that first week of real football, right? Like where you have high school's already in. After this week in high school football, you're a third of the way through the regular season. Badgers football is on to week 2, and then the NFL is week 1. So we are in September. We are full go on football season right now.
And your first reaction when you heard the news that Micah Parsons was coming to the Packers from Dallas?
Well, as a Civic Media employee, it was, well, I'm in the middle of high school football practice, so I can't do the updates. Mike Clements was covering a presser in Green Bay, so our very own Luke Mather stepped to the plate to get the breaking news alert out about that. So that was my first initial thought. But from an on-the-field perspective, if you're the Packers, you do this 100 times out of 100. You get one of the NFL's premier talents, one of the somebody with a unique talent in the NFL, and you get him for a couple of first-round draft picks and a pretty good player in Kenny Clark for your interior line. You just think back to like what the 49ers gave up for Trey Lance at quarterback. They gave up 3 first-round draft picks. So the Packers getting Micah Parsons for 2 first-round draft picks and a pretty good player. I mean, you do that deal every time. That's amazing.
I paused long enough to bring Parker Olson back into the mix just to say, I hope you caught in the middle of his answer there where I said, oh yeah, about when he said the Packers would do that 100 times out of 100, and me right away with the oh yeah,
oh yeah.
That's our new thing. It's not a new thing. We're just finally noticing how often we say it here in the Midwest. So anyway, oh yeah, oh, Jimmy's yeah. here. And do you want to give a little 10-second input on how we started the hour? Jacob Mizorowski, should he be in the bullpen?
Hey, you know what? This point of the year, I think everybody's kind of a candidate for that. You have to do a lot of shuffling ahead of the playoffs, and the Brewers are going to be in the playoffs, right? Yeah. That's only a month away. So,
2.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Jimmy, thank you so much. Brewers versus Phillies coverage begins at 6:05 on stations across Civic Media. Good to see you, Jimmy. Have a great day.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. We've got Earl Ingram standing by and Melissa Baldoff with our climate check. That's all ahead on these Mornings with Pat Wrightlow, powered by Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.